Symbolism is often the issue when we think about unconscious biases. Whether it's the obvious ones like race, religion, gender, or whether it is the more nuanced groups of hierarchy, politics, and socioeconomics. If we can step out of our tribes, we begin to challenge our unconscious biases. This is Between Us, Stories of Unconscious Bias. I am Smita Tharoor. Welcome, folks. I've got somebody very interesting today that I'm about to speak with. Cyrus Brocha is an Indian TV anchor, theatre personality, comedian, political satirist, columnist, podcaster, and if that's not enough, author as well. And hang on a minute, there's some more. He is also a prankster, best known for his show Bakra on MTV and his show The Week That Wasn't on CNN News 18. He is also the host of Hashtag Cyrus Says on IVM Podcasts, which, for those of you in India, is one of the best-known podcasts in the country. So I'm really looking forward to speaking with Cyrus, because I know that the conversations that he's going to share around unconscious bias is going to be a lot of fun and more. So thank you, Cyrus, for giving me your time, and welcome to Stories of Unconscious Bias.
Thank you so much, Smita. Sorry, you caught me off guard, because your voice sounds like one of those BBC voices we grew up on. I thought it'll just carry on for the next 15 minutes and give me some good news. But sadly, it ended and my name came out. Lots of lies in that introduction. I have to blame Kaustubh, my manager, for that. Completely his fault. Best podcast, they're like 3.5 podcasts. You know, I mean, at best, we would be, I think, 3rd out of 3.5.
Well, you know what? I bet it's pretty, pretty best. Because Cyrus is very well known. For those of you who have never heard of him, you may search. I'm talking to people who might be sitting in New Zealand. But I suspect you're pretty widely heard.
Yeah, but they know me as Miley Cyrus and my female avatar, and it's totally different me. Quite embarrassing, because when I started, there weren't too many Cyruses around. But then this girl came up with the same name, and it's horrible. The searches always begin and end with her. I hate you, Miley.
Okay, so it's so interesting because you talked about the BBC sound. I mean, you know, that you and I grew up in India.
My generation grew up in the 80s and 90s. We had the radio and very strong affinity toward radio. We're a radio generation still up to the 90s.
And then, well, I'm happy to hear that because I'm a 70s and 80s girl. But so, Cyrus, that showed a little bit of unconscious bias in itself, I thought.
I think so.
So, I mean, so what does that mean to you then, those words, unconscious bias?
The word, first, is they sound like a paradox. And, you know, I mean, I'm fascinated by paradoxes. I think everything in my life, if it's two contrasting things, I like it a lot. For example, Indian politics, which is the idea is to govern, but that rarely happens. So that's a paradox right there. We discussed this offline and I was trying to think about what are the unconscious biases, which of course, well, when they become conscious, are no longer unconscious.
Because exactly. Analyze. Naturally.
So there again, ponders and says, well, hey, wait a minute, I've lost the premise completely. But so I was trying to think, and mine are slightly, I won't say all are flippant, but the ones that I could come up with are slightly, let's say, trivial. Some people, but not for me. One of the big unconscious biases I had growing up, I was almost like I'm sure there are a lot of people like me who've done the same thing. You tend to almost become a socialist or a leftist or a communist, if I may, without knowing it. So I remember that if my parents were firing a staff member, you know, I would take their side as a young kid, I'm saying. And, you know, that would really infuriate them. How dare you take their side or whatever. I'm not trying to paint a picture of me being one of these revolutionaries who comes from a one class of society and stands for the rest. It wasn't quite that. I think it was more to do with the underdog. Because even with sport or anything else, I always like to take a side of the David versus the Goliath sort of situation. So this would happen and this is continued. I have an instinct immediately, if something is happening, to go with the person who's on the back foot, to go with the person who's getting bullied, to go with the... Again, I'm not going to praise myself here, so let me get this right. Because it's not really a positive thing. It's more like a glorifying yourself, maybe without knowing it. Some sort of unconscious bias.
That's really interesting, Cyrus. And automatically, when you're saying that, I'm thinking, there's a bigger story here that perhaps Cyrus is not sharing. Well, I don't know. Maybe you were bullied as a kid. I don't know. Can you tell us more as to why you jumped to these conclusions as a kid in representing or supporting the underdog, for want of a better word?
The word came from my parents, because they would say that I've taken after my aunt, Olga Tellis, who was a journalist, and she was famous for taking up causes, etc. You use the word, you know, you're just like your aunt, always want to fight for the underdog, always like it's this badge you're wearing. Here's the question. The unconscious bias is not that you've got a tendency to go for the smaller dog in the fight. The question is whether you do it to glorify and validate yourself, in which case, you know, there's no real pure energy involved in that. As mm-hmm. against some selfless Jesus-like figure who is willing to give his life to save humanity because that's what he wants to do. Only while discussing this with you and then trying to think about it, you said, have a think on your own and see if there's an unconscious bias. I was trying to think, why do I do that? You know, as a kid, you're not even sure. You just have instincts. You just do it. Sure, there must have been some element of trying to support the guy who's getting fired. I mean, a lot of people would have done that. You know, you just want to help the person who's on the back foot of getting...
But not everybody does, though, Cyrus. That's the point. See, we're making an assumption. I mean, your example is not a trite example. It's an example that actually is very relevant to many people, that some of us, and not all of us, they instinctively want to support the underdog. And it could be because of something that happened in our own lives. Even as a child, even if you were only 10 or 15 years old and you heard your parents getting angry with an employee within the house, your instinct was to support the employee.
Yeah, but I think that example is horrible because that makes them look like real despots, which they weren't really. But what their point was, you know, we're a team. So when we're doing something, don't, you know, rock the boat. Which you realize later they had their point of view. I don't know, maybe you're right. I haven't been able to figure out my childhood if there was a trap or whatever. But I always tend to go, like I said, even in sport, give me a big football team or Manchester City versus a Sheffield United or whatever, I would go with the smaller team. It's like that.
That's how you are, right?
Yeah.
No, yeah, I'll tell you why I said that. No, it might be, but I wonder whether you're putting yourself down because
I'm not putting myself down here. I'm not sword in hand fighting for the oppressed. You know, I'm a complete capitalist pig in most ways. But there have been occasions when my first instinct is always like a reaction, immediate reaction without seeing the case for what it is.
No. That's what it is, though, isn't it? An unconscious bias, very simply put, is an immediate, instinctive. It's just there. It's a push. You're not planning it. You're not analyzing it. You're not being intellectual about it. It's just an instinctive reaction.
But I would never have if I never met you. Thanks to you, I've been thinking about it. You know, it's like self-therapy. I'm sure you discuss this with many people. It's scary, actually, because you open yourself up to analysis, which you don't really do. We do analyze ourselves in terms of career, fatherhood, husbandhood. But those are really quite easy and sort of normal, you know, conventional sort of thinking. But when you think about what your unconscious biases are, do you have any for better or for worse, and try to understand them?
But your point, the example that you've just given, Cyrus, reminded me of my very, very, very first interview 5 seasons ago. Because when I launched this podcast, I launched it for those of you in India, we know the very, very well-known Bollywood film actor Vidya Balan. And when we were talking about unconscious bias, like I am with you, she said many things, but one thing which resonates with what you're saying is she said that whenever she met someone who was slightly plump, whether a man or a woman, but particularly women who were slightly plump, her natural instinct was to be supportive and more friendly with them. She didn't think about it. She didn't question it. She just did it. And then cut to the chase, Vidya herself was quite plump when she was a little kid.
Is it empathy? Or is it almost like you're feeling bad for them? In which case...
No, it's empathy. Like, from her perspective, it's very much empathy. She knew what it felt like. And she wanted to support them because she was there, been there. Mm-hmm. And so I wondered whether you'd been there. And you knew what it felt like. And therefore, you were supporting them.
I don't know. I can't say that I was really bullied badly. I must have had a few incidents here and there, like most people had. It would be wrong to make up a story and say, 10 boys made me feel really horrible in school or whatever. That didn't really happen. But I can tell you that this continues till today. I remember at the gym, like some time back, I nearly got into a fight with another member at the Bombay Gymkhana Club because he's just talking down to the staff guy. Now, again, please understand, I'm not socialist. I'm not leftist in any way. I don't have the milk of human kindness coming out of me from any angle. But, you know, immediately my instinct was like, hey, bro, why are you talking to him like that? And then I realized that I become like fighting words and things were going to get out of hand really quickly. And that maybe, you know, there was no need for me to be so aggressive, almost emotional. Because at the end of the day, what do we do for anybody anyway? You know, so it's a little hypocritical. Suddenly you stand up because the guy's talking down to someone. But you know, in India, it happens all the time. When they call waiters, anybody in service to you, we have this top dog, bottom dog thing, which I hate. I hate it. You know, there's no sense of egalitarianism. And so they call you sir, and you keep telling them, please stop calling me sir, I'm no sir. And then on the other hand, you know, richer people or people in more affluent positions are always just, you know, the tone of voice, forget what they say, is always wrong. So these things from childhood have really irritated me, honestly. And I spend half my day telling people, if they call me sir, I attack them. That's just beyond the capacity of our country to understand. It's a sycophantic country. I've just given up.
So, I mean, I believe, and because I read this just a few weeks ago, and as you know, I'm in India at the moment, that there are now some organizations that are working very hard at removing the word sir. And this was particularly in a school. Yeah, the children were being asked to call the teachers teacher rather than sir and ma'am. So it is now beginning at childhood that your job is the teacher. I will call you teacher. So teacher Brocha or teacher Banerjee or teacher Tharoor.
I don't even know why they take labels, you know. I honestly don't. And the other thing is, why do we have to over-respect seeing people because they're older? Where's this correlation? Like, I don't understand the thought behind it. Please call him uncle. Show respect. Why? Just be normal.
So what is normal to you then, Cyrus?
Normal is a sense of egalitarianism with everybody. Everybody sort of has some sense of, you know, that we're all part of the same thing. There's no up and down here. Everybody show respect, uncle, touch feet. I hate all that. I really, if I could just take a brush and wipe it out of our culture, I would do it. You know, even today, it's years. It's not even one generation. It's hundreds, thousands of years of people being submissive for no reason. Why? For example, I mean, it's not like they really respect you, but they're submissive because they believe you're more powerful than them. That's it. And that's not really true. You just have a little more money. That's it. You know, people have to start believing in themselves more. And why can't we just have relations like you have in Australia, perhaps, countries like that, which is slightly, they're not defined by the disparity in income, whatever little they do have. I did an ad film in Sydney, and the chauffeur and I sat together on the same table and ate food, the one they had designated for me, and we chatted normally. Yeah, so there's an unconscious bias which is there in the classes of society where we just continue with this hierarchy and this hierarchy system. And it's just completely wrong.
And you're trying to work on it and trying to change that hierarchy system.
No, I've given up on everything. I have no energy. My testosterone levels are dipping now at this age. Yeah, my days are done. It still gets my blood boiling.
It certainly does.
So I don't know. Going back to why I had this thing, affinity towards the, let's call him the loser. Maybe because I identify with the loser as Vidya did with the fat person. Can't say for sure. Maybe, maybe not. But it's been there. Or maybe it's my aunt's DNA. I don't know.
So tell me about this, your aunt's DNA. What's all that about? Is that part of your unconscious bias, do you think? Is that the fact that you've grown up? Where your parents have said to you, hey, Cyrus, look at your aunt. She's like this. And you have instinctively kind of emulated this person. Is that what it's about?
See, my aunt was and is a very, she lives a life. She's a very non-material person. And she's the real deal, okay? She, you know, gives everything to everybody. And she supported the pavement dweller movement, went to court. She even, in a sense, was, you know, from what I gather, sympathetic to all kinds of movements, you know. And that's not a stand you can take in India where everything they want to be black or white. You can't ever be in the middle. My father and her used to clash. You can't imagine this. My dad is very pro-Israel. Okay, he's a Parsi gentleman who loves his classical music, etc., etc. And you know, the Jews and Israel have given us so much in terms of culture. And my aunt is so pro-Arab. Sorry, I won't say Arab because they didn't really help the Palestinians. Palestine. And she had Yasser Arafat pictures at home and all. So as a young boy, I was in the middle of the Yom Kippur War from time to time between the two of them. So that extreme side is there from in my family, I'm saying in some parts of the DNA. A very strong view, not half-hearted grey views. But I don't know. I can't tell you for sure whether nature, nurture, working together, what percentage. That I'm not able to answer, to be frank.
No, that's fair enough. I was just curious because you mentioned your art and I thought I must chase that. Before I ask you to share some more stories of unconscious bias, I'm just curious to learn a little bit about the surname of your Cyrus, because I don't know a Brocha other than you. What does that say to us, his Brocha name? Can you explain that?
So when the Parsis settled in India, like most communities, some of them took the geographical name. So we settled somewhere in Bharuch, which is Bharuch in Gujarat, southern Gujarat, I think. I've never been. So the anglicized name is Broach. If you remember your old textbook, Broach, Cambay, Sopara, those famous ports.
Mm-hmm. I do.
So those are all the anglicized versions of the various names. So in Gujarati, if you would say it, you'd never say Broach, you'll say Bharuch. So people are more familiar with that in this part of the world, if you use the word Bharuch. And there are many Bharuchas. To keep it that way. But we were Brochas because Sir Shapuji, my great-great-grandfather, he was knighted for his economic reforms. He was a philanthropist, built a lot of the bags here in Mumbai, gave lots of money to the poor, etc. Owned Phoenix and Dawn Mills, which of course, the names that he had given them, which have now passed on more than once to different owners. And so that legacy is left behind. You can see that I come from the part of India which may not have been that happy when the British left. Let's put it that way. And I know Shashi, your brother, has given now an iconic sermon on British atrocities and how they literally looted every last cent or paisa rather from India. But having said that, let's just say that my part of the family the British were quite welcome.
Well, that was a long time ago, because you're talking about, you know, way back in the 1800s.
The Stock Exchange is one of the founding members of the Stock Exchange. Mm. So I got some good blood in the family with her. There you go. Got my aunt also. About the first female investigative journalist of India. Got my great-grandfather. And then there's me, which is like a great letdown after what they put aside.
Right. So, ladies and gentlemen, those of you who are listening to this podcast, the great letdown also happens to be a TV anchor, theatre personality, comedian, political satirist.
Oh,
come
that's
on,
all
Sarah.
Fluff.
So tell me about this fluff
stock exchange, economic reforms, helps the poor, builds parks where people live, you know, actual places for people to live. Look at what he's done. My aunt fights for, has fought, gone to prison, gone to court, stood there. I mean, she's got nothing. She just has a small house. Real people of substance. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to...
That is really interesting, Cyrus, that you feel that someone who does, I'm not taking away from your comment, people of substance are like so. Whereas you who have achieved so much and make us laugh and make us smile, especially during COVID times when a lot of people are quite depressed, and you're giving, for want of a better word, a happy smile and a joy on our face. Oh, great. It's a Cyrus show. Let's watch this. It's fluff, is it? Does it not do more than that?
You know, you're being very kind, and I'm happy to hear all this, and I'll show to my mom the one fan I still have. But having said that, I really, honestly, we do comedy, we have a good time, do a little bit of satire. It's not quite Jonathan Swift, but it is what it is. And we got a lovely country and lovely world that we've inherited, which is just so much to laugh at. But compared to what they've done, it's still, in my mind, is really not much. You know,
fair,
it's just
fair
things you'll end up doing, that's it. I would think that when people look back, if you look back at people who leave legacies, there's got to be something which people can really appreciate, you know, in a non-tangible way as well as perhaps sometimes tangible way. So I think if I built the stock exchange and my bus was there today, that would be something.
So any other stories that you can share then about your unconscious biases?
Yeah. So, by the way, I think I've become a feminist, full feminist, and I blame my mom, my wife and my daughter, all alpha females. So I've just given up. I'm just not fighting the feminist thing anymore. I've just, you know what they say, if you can't beat them, join them. So, you know.
So actually, before you even share more stories, I would love to know what you mean by the word feminist. What's your understanding of it?
I'll tell you, my daughter gave me a... Little kids are horrible people. They say they're going to teach kids. We teach them nothing. They really irritate you because they really... There's a little while, maybe 1 to 5 or 6 or whatever, when they're actually innocent. Then they become almost scum, you know, after that. But there's a bit when they really are. So first my son, one day, and this is something which, you know, I mean, Christopher Hitchens himself, you know, would have applauded. My son asked me, he was 3, and we were discussing, I don't know what, and he just says, but tell me one thing, who is God's mother? And I didn't have an answer, because there'll be battles fought over that. You know, there were wars, if you have a definition for who God's mother is, or so I just didn't could answer that. That was one. Then my daughter, later on in my life, she comes up and we're listening to songs. I'm a big 60s lover, music lover. So I like the Beatles, that era, more than anything else. I've introduced my kids to my music, obviously. And after some time, one day, we're driving back from somewhere, says, Dad, do you know any female singers? And there you go with unconscious bias. And I was like, give me a second. Now, this was like, you know, what? Completely caught off guard. So without knowing it, you're a sexist. You know, you've got, I don't know, I can name you everybody. You know, Everly Brothers, Beatles, Simon and Garfunkel, Jim Morrison, Chuck Berry. I mean, I just can go on and on. You know, I've got Bob Dylan. There's no end to it. Elvis, Nat King Cole, Andy Williams. There's no end to it. Where are the females? So we grew up. Great difficulty, Maria Callas comes into it. I have to think really hard. And Madonna, who I never liked, but I could remember the name. Country singers come into it, you know, a couple of songs from my childhood, Susan Ray, etc. But it was absolutely, I mean, talk about the word bias. And so then I was thinking later to myself and said, bro, you've got a long way to go. So I think all men should have daughters, because we who think we are liberals, who think we are, you know, really all for women's equality, etc., we're full of crap. At the end of the day, without knowing it, you've grown up in the same world as the other men. And the difference is very slight between you and the actual MCPs and chauvinists, etc. So immediately, Ariana Grande came out, who's, by the way, Smita, I don't know if you know, very famous contemporary singer.
I do.
And I was schooled. And the teacher became the student, and the student became the teacher. So that was an unconsciousness immediately. And I was, and that's why I say I've become a feminist, is because I realized that for too long, people don't know. You're talking about Black Lives Matter and all that. The biggest problem is not those vicious people. Vicious people know they're vicious. It's when you don't know you're vicious, when you don't know. You know, that ignorance is the issue. Ignorance is the sin, really, more than anything else. I honestly swear, because I have very liberal parents and a very easy background, and all the girls would come in our teenage years, would come here from conservative families and change clothes, you know, go get into boob tubes and go dancing and all that, then come back here and wear the salwar kameez and go home. My house was here. This was it. This was, you know, it was like a 60s flower child, the Greenwich Village kind of establishment. But in spite of all that, I didn't know the female singers or female actresses. I mean, I knew, but the difference was like 90-10.
Tell me more about yourselves, Cyrus. You've had a fun career for a long time. You know, you started acting at a very early age. It's been something that you've done instinctively, is my understanding. And of course, you know, other than being all the things you've already read out, you also host a podcast, you've written a book, you've done many things. So tell us a little bit more about these things and how they're connected to what you and I are calling unconscious bias. All these different headlines that I've read out about you, are they all connected to one thing that moves you, that motivates you? Tell us more.
That would be survival, Smita. In India, you have to be a broad entertainer and take whatever gig you get at some point. But yeah, it's not been too bad. I can't complain, really. I think most likely right place, right time in terms of 1993 FM radio, which was the first thing that happened. Okay, in 85, I did a play. I went for an audition. I did an English play with Pearl Pavamsi, and got a long story short, I was only 14. So I sort of touched, you know, put your foot in the door kind of the situation. And then in 93, we had FM radio. They called just four or five of us who had, you know, vague names in the theater circuit. And we all got jobs on radio. And then from there, the music channel started. So I really think I was right place, right time. You know, we were a little lucky that way, no doubt about it. I was even more lucky that everywhere I went, I think I was the only guy physically for the part, in the sense that I was a 14-year-old for Brighton Beach Memoirs, which is Neil Simon's first part of his trilogy, like a biography sort of, a set of plays. So I was the only 14-year-old in the audition. All the other guys were 17, 18. Some really hirsute, muscled, big-looking fellows with hair on the chin, etc. And this is a prepubescent almost sort of guy. You know, he's a small-built, round-faced sort of guy, which is exactly what I look like then, sort of what I look like now, my wife will tell you.
So any other story you can share with us, Cyrus?
The other thing that I have a huge, it's not an unconscious bias anymore. How do I say this without a sense of hubris? Let's face it, people who love religion and identify with community and caste and all that, in many ways, we look down on them, a set of us, I would say, across the world, because we don't understand that tribalism and stupidity of that beyond a point. Is this safe to say, Smita, on your program?
Go for it. Absolutely.
So having said that, I identify, and I know a lot of people identify today with commonality. The tribalism is more that, right? So my commonalities, I'm a huge animal lover, and I love people who love animals. If I see someone feeding a dog or feeding a cat, I'm friends immediately. If somebody's walking their dog, the kid in me is still there. I got to go and say hi. I drop everything, you know. And one of my favorite stories is Mahendra Singh Dhoni and me. And this is the day that Pramod Mahajan got shot, because that was happening in the background. We had to shoot with Dhoni for something for MTV in Taj Lands End. And I remember we were waiting for the setup in the background. And the security guards came with the two Labradors. And both of us just dropped everything to go and play with the Labradors. I didn't know he was a dog lover. Best friends of life. We were on all fours, talking in gibberish. We were exactly the same. So in that sense, no sense of, I can never think of myself as someone who's bound to a community, or it's really hard for me to think of all these things. But for animals, so I have got into all physical fights till the last few months. All of that happens because of animals. I just absolutely lose it sometimes. I'm trying my best to restrain myself. For example, I'll tell you, again, this makes me sound great again, so please don't misunderstand. It's more like madness. This guy kicking a dog at Walkeshwar for 3 or 4 years before the pandemic, he and the wife were driving down. And the dog is crying, and he's going on kicking the dog, you know, and he's holding him from one end. So I stopped the car and went there, and I caught his hand, and I made him slap my face. I said, mujhe maro, jo frustration hai, mujhe maro, like that. And he was so appalled, and he felt so bad, that he actually stopped. And it was like a Buddha moment for a second, you know, part spiritual, part crazy, you know, just for a second. And my wife laughed so much, but I know she was happy, you know, for once. Mm. Otherwise, just going there and attacking people and getting, you know, then it becomes into a class issue and, you know, all kinds of other myriad layers that are there in our complex culture that come out from one simple thing, where the dynamics don't end. Like an onion, there's another layer of problems below
that's,
that.
That's a great story. That really is a great story, Cyrus.
It was. But again, please don't ever try to sound like a... I don't want to sound like I'm glorifying myself, because I really...
No, it isn't about that. It's what you've just said, you see. Because you instinctively, you've already shared with us that you like to be egalitarian. It's about having an equal platform from everyone. But the country that you live in and you love is not like that. And so when you're seeing something that you knew fundamentally was wrong, which was of kicking an animal, where the animal cannot kick back, rather than get angry and shout and yell and be aggressive to the aggressor, you turned it around split second. That was your instinct. That was your unconscious bias and your egalitarian business that came in immediately. Your wanting to do the right thing came in immediately. And you didn't do it aggressively. Most of us who love dogs would have got out of that car, would have run to that man and probably shouted at him aggressively.
Smita, you're right to a point. I'll say that because that would be step one and done many times. Nothing good happens out of that.
Precisely. Well, you know that I know that. But you did it instinctively.
But I've assaulted people. I've been really badly behaved. And then crowds happen. And then I've seen the next part of it. Then you look like rich man, dog loving over poor man. As in dog bigger than poor man. You know, that kind of equation is going on in the bubble behind. So it's possible that in a split second, I was intelligent enough to figure that I have to find another way.
It's learned experience, isn't it?
Yeah, maybe. Unconscious is a good word here. Because I did not consciously do anything. I
went you didn't out plan it. You stopped the car, you opened the car, you ran out. That's it. And you did
and
what
and
you did.
He was appalled. Now, I don't know exactly what happened, but his reaction I never got from anybody else. He stopped. He didn't want me to use his hand to hit my face. He was appalled by that. You know, that was like bad karma for him or whatever the reason was. It worked. The fight went out of him. There was no fight. You know, there was no desire to fight and argue like it would have been on another day with another person.
That's such a simple story. And yet it's such a powerful story. Yeah. In terms of communication and how we can so easily, when we're wanting to communicate with somebody to diffuse a situation, doesn't matter what the situation is, we often exacerbate the situation because of how or what we might have said to that person. Because we are also feeling riled up and then we say X and then things get worse. Whereas with your very astute, very simple reaction, it was diffused within seconds. Which I think is fabulous, something to learn from all of
As
us.
As my madness left me, I was a little embarrassed. So I quickly got back in the car. And my wife, who normally derides me, although she's quite the, you know, she'll always fight for animals and all that herself. But she was laughing and I could see it in her eyes. She was laughing. It was not a laugh down, you know. It wasn't one of those laugh downs, how stupid you are. Although she was saying words to that effect. I know that in a way I had sort of charmed her a little bit. So, you know.
Oh yeah, laughter pride, absolutely. It's a brilliant story. I love it. Listen, we've talked about, you know, when we first met a few weeks ago to set up this interview, we talked about the idea of unconscious bias and the fact that it influences both you and me and everyone around and all our listeners all the time. So well, what does this do? I mean, how do you, you know, what do you do? How do you manage these unconscious biases that might kick in every once in a while that perhaps you're not happy with? How do you challenge them?
I'm more scared that you expose yourself more, you know, when these things happen as to yourself. You expose yourself to yourself is what I'm trying to say. Because, you know, your self-confidence, that veneer of invincibility starts cracking. And you start, wait a minute, who am I? Am I like this? Like, for example, if you get into a scrap with someone, would you call him worse to the effect that he's not from a very wealthy family, that he's from this background? It's how people land up becoming, you know, racist slurs or communal slurs or classist slurs. All these things come out. And then you go back in your conscious state and say, but I'm not like that. But then I don't know. Now you tell me, you come up with this theory of unconscious bias and I say, what the hell? Maybe we all like that. Just a, you know, a bunch of nuts at the end of the day who have all these things inside and, you know, we're consciously trying to stop it. That's the truth. If we look at a more negative premise for humanity, as in selfish, egoistic and cruel as some of the philosophers have given us, acquisitive nature and that's it. If we look at it from that point of view, then all we can do under this veneer of civilized identity is pretend we're not all the bad things that we really are because it comes out under pressure.
So are you saying then that it's a fear, a genuine fear that we're all made up of these, you know, the good, bad and ugly within us. And therefore, because we don't want the ugly and the bad to come out of us, we, as in you specifically, work hard at just doing the right thing. Is that what you're saying?
I don't know. I'm saying we work unconsciously, in a sense, unconsciously to consciously suppress it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We're consciously suppressing these things when we do it, but we've unconsciously worked behind the scenes that we should do this. This is the right thing to do. So I don't know how pure our intent is. That's what I'm trying to say. I wonder sometimes. Because there's just too many flaws in humanity. There's just, if you really look at it, I mean, same things, smaller things, but there are things like, everyday things like disparity in income, lifestyles, exploitation. I mean, not even the worst things like death, murder, genocide, and the work. So sometimes, you know, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Hopefully I'm wrong. What do I know?
I think that's actually very moving, Cyrus, because, I mean, it's important for all of us around the world to acknowledge that at the end of the day, we're only humans and we all create our own reality. And we might consider ourselves to be amazing and wonderful, inclusive and sharing and giving. And, you know, you can add many more words to describe how we see ourselves. But we're also a lot of, you know, other things, because that's what makes us human. We're selfish, we're needy, we could be demandless, we could be querulous, we could be all of that. And so there is no, this purity is not there. And that's what you said. And I like that. and flag it up and acknowledge it. And then within all of that stuff that goes on, peeling an onion, you said, I loved it. Recognize, acknowledge, and then just live with yourself the best way you can.
But this is true of our community as well, urban India, I would say. Let's call it urban India community, where if you get into anything with anyone, it sort of reverberates into more things. It's never that. It's never about that, the thing that started it all. It always goes into something else. Rich man, poor man, though, all our life we see that. You're wearing jeans.
That's the world over. That's the world over, isn't it?
You think?
To a great degree. Rich man, poor man, yeah.
Yeah, you know, because then the incident is over parking dispute or something like that. And then you're fighting because of the hatred you feel towards this class of society. You know what I'm saying? That's the fuel that you're using. And then beyond that, something else. But then, oh God, in our country, then there's religion, then there's caste, and there's... So there'll be left-handers versus right-handers. I'm telling you.
And so what you do, Cyrus, is that you work very hard at not being left nor right, sticking in the middle and doing the right thing by yourself and the people you connect
to. That is the coward's territory. I accept that. Fair enough. But the political philosophy, in any case, if you want to get into that side of it, is not something which is concrete or scientific in any way. But I can't understand how anyone can be always left or always right. It's just not possible. The most left-leaning can't be left all the time. There's some issues and things where you're going to go more right and vice versa. So, again, this tribalism, we've got to put that stamp on ourselves and say, okay, I'm going to be conservative, I'm going to be, you know, a liberal, libertarian, if you like, whatever the words are. I don't know. You know, I think that this is wear the label like a cap, and then it, you know, it doesn't work anymore. It just gets corrupted after some time because you're not, no one is that.
I think that's very wise. And I'm going to pause there, Cyrus. I could talk to you forever because what you're saying, it's so simple and yet it's actually very profound. And for those of us who are listening, I imagine that after you hear it once, going to play it back again and say, oh yeah, actually that makes sense. And listen again a second or a third time, because that's what I've enjoyed speaking with you about, Cyrus. You've talked about simple stuff, obvious things that all of us know, some of us don't acknowledge, and all of us should try and practice. So I think that's brilliant. Cyrus Writers Project, thank you really very, very much for sharing your stories of unconscious bias with me.
Just like every other woman I've known, Smita, just that's it. Off you go. Leave me in the lurch. Unbelievable. Yeah, just say, huge fan of your brother. Huge fan. Absolutely a fantastic human being.
Thank you so much for listening. I have been told that this podcast is ranked in the top 3% globally and heard by people in 98 countries. Thank you, listener, wherever you are, whether it's Albania, Afghanistan, Nigeria or Nepal, Sweden or Saudi Arabia. We could not have this podcast without you, the listener. As always, if you like this episode, please do share. I would also like to thank Jack Godfrey for his original music for season 6.